Hey, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Approved. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Just a moment, we'll head to Pittsburgh. We'll learn a little bit more about the Steelers team. You heard some of what Mike Vrabel said today to the media. Maybe Adoree Jackson's getting a little bit closer, possibly playing on Sunday. I kind of feel like that's where it's going. Willie, I kind of felt like you had the same thought yesterday, too.
Yeah, I think so. It just depends on... But I think if he completes 3 days of practice, yesterday, today, tomorrow,
he's playing.
Then I think he's in.
Yeah.
Now, if there's a setback, if there's swelling, there's things like that, then that's another story. But I think if he completes 3 days of practice, I think at the very least he's a situational. I think you can find a role for him, maybe where he doesn't play every down, but he can contribute. I think he would be better than your fourth, fifth, sixth corner. At the very least. And you're going to need a lot of corners in this game because the Steelers spray the ball around a lot. As we talked about earlier, they have a lot of guys that they throw to. They have five different players, when you include Ebron, between 24 and 28 targets through five games. Nobody with more than 28, but all those guys have at least 24. So there's a lot of guys you have to account for.
Are we surprised Juju Smith-Schuster is not, you know, the heavy go-to guy?
Yeah, I think that's the number one thing that pops out at you when you throw that stat out, right? That he is not a guy that's been a high volume. And I'm sure anybody who owns him on their fantasy team is wondering why that is, too.
He's got 160 yards like he's done nothing this year. I know.
I mean, he's answering questions where he's saying happy to be 5-0, whether I'm getting the ball or not. I don't know about that.
I mean, his highest output game is 6 catches for 69 yards. Now, albeit he had 2 touchdowns in that game, but 69 yards receiving is not typical from what we've seen of him over the years, right? I mean,
no. Man, I wonder if it's just simply he's the much highest known guy, established guy, and therefore he's getting more attention from the coverage. And each passing week that other guys like Claypool emerge, that it'll get easier for him to get open. I don't know. We've seen that happen.
And that's what we need. In fact, I'm going to ask that right out of the gate. How do you go from 2018 where you have 111 catches for a year, 111 receptions for over 1,400 yards? And last year, he missed, some game. I think he missed 3 or 4 games.
Yep.
But he had 550 yards receiving and 42 catches. More than half. Everything cut in half.
Three TDs.
Like, what's happened? And this year, sitting here 5 games into the Steelers, it's like, he's a target. He's not the target.
And you know what's interesting? When you look a little closer, he's getting targeted not very much, right? 28 times, which is the highest on the team. But as we said, they're throwing the ball to a lot of different guys. And he's catching the ball when it's thrown to him. 82% of the targets he's caught. But he's not getting a lot of yards. As you said, Darren, it's a lot of short stuff.
Yeah, and like you think about it, his first 2 years he had, and his longest reception was 97 yards both those years, and then 76. I mean, it 26 this year. It sounds like he's not getting the long ball. You know, he's not breaking the long run like he's been able to do.
Well, let's head up to Pittsburgh. Let's find out. Let's just start there and welcome in Jerry Dulac, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Jerry, thanks for joining us. We were just having the conversation about Juju Smith-Schuster. And, you know, when you think about that 2018 season where he had, you know, over 1,400 yards receiving, 111 grabs. I mean, he had a monster year. And last year, everything more than cut in half. And I know this year he's been dealing with a knee injury. But what's going on? Why isn't – he's a guy in that offense. He's not the guy. Why?
Yeah, good afternoon, fellas. That's a good question. You know, don't forget, in 2018, he had the benefit of playing with Antonio Brown. And he will freely admit that so much of the coverage went to Antonio Brown or rotated toward him, that left Juju Smith-Schuster as a viable option. And, of course, he had Ben Roethlisberger throwing to him. Last year, he didn't have Ben Roethlisberger throwing to him, and he didn't have Antonio Brown lining on the opposite side. So quite naturally, teams would rotate their coverage more to Juju than anybody else. And this year, you know, obviously he's off to a slow start numbers-wise, but he still has that connection for Ben Roethlisberger when it matters. That's the guy he wants to look to. He's also still the guy the teams are paying attention to. Now, as Chase Claypool continues to make big plays, you know, maybe that will change. But then again, Chase Claypool's not playing as many snaps as Juju either. So there's a number of reasons for it. You know, there are people around the league who question whether Juju Smith was a number one receiver, if you will. And he has yet to have the opportunity to prove it or just even prove it on his own for several reasons. But it's something worth watching. But I think those are the reasons why his numbers aren't what they were in 2018. There's some mitigating factors there.
Jerry, you literally stole my follow-up question, because we've dealt with this here in Nashville with Titans receivers over the years. And sometimes when we thought, you know, what are they, a one or two, somebody pays them to go away to be their one, and we find out they were actually a number two. They weren't a number one. They benefited from what you were just saying that. So my follow-up was literally going to be, though, with that being said, do we think Juju's more of a number two than a number one? Because the number ones get that, you know, year in and year out, and the number ones always find a way to get open. The number ones always find a way to still have those big numbers. So is he more of a two than a one, in your opinion?
Yeah, the number ones are typically the DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, big plays down the field. And I say that, and you saw the numbers that Juju Smith Schuster had as a rookie, that he did have some big numbers, some big plays in terms of yardage. Or they're the type like Antonio Brown, who is uncoverable coming out of breaks. And Juju Smith-Schuster is neither of those types of guys, and I think that's why teams look at him as, you know, maybe not a number one. There's no question he's a really good number two. But I don't know that the Steelers are necessarily interested right now in who's one, even though he is one, he plays the vast majority of snaps, or who's two, or who's three, or maybe even who's four. Because right now Chase Claypool is four, and yet he's the guy who's making the plays. So now, when it's going to become significant is after this season, when Juju Smith-Schuster's a free agent, and then they have to make the decision, do we want to sign him to a contract as a, quote, number one receiver, or do we feel that, you know, his price on the market, might be too high, and they're willing not to go there? I think that's when it's going to be determined whether they feel he's a one or a two is after the season.
Titans took a huge blow in their win last week, their overtime win over the Texans. They lose their left tackle for the season with an ACL injury. So vitally important cog there on the offensive line. Now they'll have to figure out how to do this the rest of the way without him. A guy who's vitally important on a very, very good defense is Devin Bush. He's gone. How hard is it to try to replace him, and how will they go about it?
You know, fellas, on a defense that has three all-pros, I have always felt that Devin Bush was the most indispensable player on that defense, the one guy they couldn't lose. One, because of his abilities and his speed. Two, because of the way the game is played in today's NFL. And three, because you don't have anybody like him to replace him. And, of course, if you did, then you wouldn't have had to go get Devin Bush. And that's why they traded up 10 spots in the draft last year to go get him. They saw how long it took them to find a replacement for Ryan Shazier and what not having Ryan Shazier meant to their defense. So to me, it's a significant blow to them. It really, I think, is going to rear its head next week when they play the Ravens, because Devin Bush is the perfect type of player with his speed to spy on Lamar Jackson, much how they used him a couple weeks ago when they played the Texans with Deshaun Watson. So to me, it's a big blow to their defense. And, you know, Taylor Lewan's going to be out. Not a good time going against this defense, which gets after the quarterback, as you guys know, better than anybody. And but for the Steelers, we'll find out going forward just how they're able to replace them, even though they can't replace them.
Jerry Dulac is with us, covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Jerry, thanks for joining us today. And I want to ask you, and this is sort of an intangible question. It's hard to know, but we saw some of the outspoken people, the frustration of this game being moved a few weeks ago and the reasons why with the COVID outbreak that the Titans had. Do you think that they're over that, or do you think there's still some lingering bitterness that this cost the Steelers their bye week, et cetera?
Yeah, no, I think they're well past that. We heard a couple comments early on, but Mike Tomlin takes care of that very quickly. He has the guys, you know, focused on what they need to do. You know, when he was asked that following Tuesday at his news conference, hey, you might have to play 13 games in a row now. You get into the postseason. Who knows how many games that you have to play in a row? And his answer was quick and terse and without hesitation, we don't care. And that's the message he sends to his players. They will do whatever necessary. He doesn't want them focusing on that. And they don't. And that's one of the beauties of Mike Tomlin. That's why he's been so successful. He does a great job to keep his players focused on what they need to be focused on and not worry about things they can't control. And as it turns out, hey, you guys, the Titans were in a far worse boat than the Steelers. And for them to, a couple of the players to whine about it, you know, could have been a whole lot worse, as other teams have discovered.
Jerry, what can you tell us about how different the offense looks with Ben Roethlisberger now? With, you know, the repaired elbow, seems like he's getting the ball out quicker. I don't know if it seems. I think it's been documented time. They're getting it out quick. They're spraying the ball around a lot. How much of a change has this been? And it looks like he's embraced that change.
Well, I think a lot of attention is being focused on that because of his injury. The people think he's doing it to prevent harm to his elbow. And the reality is, fellas, they did that a lot before he was hurt. So it's really nothing new. And then, of course, they'll talk about how quick he gets the ball out. Next thing it's, oh, is he reluctant to throw it down the field? Look, this isn't Drew Brees here. Ben's elbow is fine. And you know, there are quick throws and a quick passing game. They did that with Antonio Brown all the time. Get the ball in the hands of your playmakers. So it's really nothing new. I just think it's receiving a little bit more attention because people want to add two and two and get five because of Ben's elbow.
And, of course, the matchup everybody's looking at. You already gave the backdrop that we've been talking about all week. This is a tremendous defensive front that knows how to stop the run. You're going up against the number one threat running-wise in the game right now in Derrick Henry. I just think we're all really excited to just see these two go at it and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree, fellas. I'm the same way. You know, the one thing about the Steelers, they not only sack the quarterback, they stop the run. And that's kind of an anomaly, where you see teams leave themselves vulnerable sacking the quarterback. They leave themselves vulnerable and exposed to the run. And this team doesn't do that. They're second in the league against the run. They would be number one if they didn't allow a 74-yard touchdown to Miles Sanders a couple weeks ago. And I will point up the last team in the NFL to lead the league in sacks and rush defense were the Steelers in 2010. So it's a combination you typically don't see, but that's how much pressure they generate up front. You'll see them use a lot of run blitzes, and they have two big ends and two outstanding outside guys, and they're very disruptive. It's the reason why they lead the league in tackles for loss too. And a big reason for that is Vince Williams. Yeah, they're very effective in their front seven, both against the run and getting after that quarterback, leading the league in sacks and quarterback hits.
Jerry, how impressed have you been with not only just T.J. Watt and how he's grown as a player over the last 3.5, 4 years, double-digit sacks the last 2 years, 4.5 on this year, but the fact that he seems to put any, you're J.J. Watt's brother, he puts that behind him, and now he's well on his way to being at the same level almost as his brother.
Yeah, he's going to be a top candidate for NFL Defensive Player of the Year because, one, of the Steelers' defense, and two, you got to, typically those awards go to teams with winning records, and obviously the Steelers and the Titans have the best two records in the AFC right now. He doesn't let that bother him. He's proud of his brother. He's not worried about what his brother did. He played like his brother. He plays with a high motor, a lot of energy, to the point he has to take himself out from time to time because he gets so amped that he gets out of wind. But he's a terrific player on that outside. They want to sign him, and they will, to a long-term contract next year. And, the tandem with the way Bud Dupree has played the last 2 years, let's face it, it's the best outside tandem edge guys in the league. It's been quite a pairing here the last 2 years.
You've talked so much about the defense and how they've played this year and whether it's the individuals or just coming together as a collective unit. But how much have you seen Keith Butler grow as a defensive coordinator over the last 6 seasons? Not easy to take over for a Hall of Famer like he did, who ended up coming to the Titans. But what have you seen from Butler?
Yeah, and you guys got a taste of Dick LeBeau as well, who's one of my all-time favorite people, and I don't need to speak about his record. I think Keith Butler goes back a long way with Mike Tomlin, and he works well with Mike Tomlin. And by that, I mean Mike Tomlin has put his fingerprints on this defense, and Keith Butler does not have a problem with that. I don't think, in fact, I know Mike Tomlin didn't want to interfere with the great Dick LeBeau, and I don't say that disparagingly or sarcastically. I think that's the way he looked at it, and he didn't want to fiddle and interfere with Dick, but I think with his working relationship with Keith Butler, which goes back to 97, they were both very comfortable working together, and I think that's what you have seen. You can have all the schemes you want. You better have the players to execute it. And when you look at the players on that defense, there's a lot of talent on that defense, especially in that front seven. And then you throw Minka Fitzpatrick in the back, Joe Hayden and Steve Nelson on the corners. They're pretty darn good.
Last thing, Jerry, who's better, this 5-0 team or the 1978 5-0 team?
I'm never going to compare any team to the 78 team. The funny thing is, fellas, I thought, and they think, we're going way back, that their best team was 1976 that didn't win the Super Bowl. They just dominated teams in the last 9 games of the year. I think they gave up 28 points and had 6 shutouts, and they lost Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris in the same playoff game against the Baltimore Colts when they annihilated them like 40-14. And then they went to Oakland without those two. Chuck Noll changed the offense, went to a one-back set, and they lost to the Raiders. But that, believe it or not, of their other four Super Bowl teams, that one was probably their best team.
Well, it's interesting because here, the team that marched to the Super Bowl the following year, I think most would believe that team was better, and they didn't get out of the first round of the playoffs. So.
Right. It happens, and then you look at what happened in 2008, fellas, when the Steelers came down there 11-3, the Titans were 12-2, the Titans handed it to them, although they came back from 14-10, I believe. And then the Titans lose in the first round of the playoffs, their first game, to Baltimore. And that brings the AFC title game back to Heinz Field, and the Steelers go to the Super Bowl after losing to the Titans. Yep.
That's exactly right. Good stuff. Was the terrible towel game here. We'll never forget that 08 game.
That Keith Bullock and Lendell White, wiping the ground with the terrible towel, they jinxed themselves.
They weren't the same after that, that's for sure.
They were not. Jerry, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this. It should be a fun Sunday watching this Titanic matchup. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Good chatting with you, fellas.
All right, Jerry Dulac, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. That will wrap up hour number three of today's show. We will come back, continue the discussion on the other side on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
But first, it is my time to tell you about BetMGM. They are coming soon to the state of Tennessee. They're the same people that you see them on the Las Vegas Strip, the the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino. They have the sports book and the casinos all over. They are coming here to Tennessee with a state-of-the-art app that is going to be able to bring you parlay bonus payouts, in-game wagering, boosted odds specials, daily promotions, and much more. Every time you make a wager, you'll earn credits in MLife Rewards, which is the exclusive loyalty program of MGM Resorts. That's going to be cool to have that in your back pocket. Every big game and every big play will mean more than ever, so get ready to experience sports like never before. Be among the first fans in the state to download the BetMGM Sports app that is coming soon to Tennessee. It'll have all sports, not just football. You'll be able to bet on college basketball, even tennis, boxing matches. It will all be there. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older. Must be present in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.